Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Nintendo Fanboys. And I'm with Steven again, so at least he speaks better English than Tim, so we'll be good. That was hilarious. Honestly, it was absolutely hilarious talking to Tim, and he's like, the Elther Throlf.
It was good. It was good. I thought Tim did well for someone who clearly doesn't know what he's talking about half the time. But he did well.
Yeah, it was good, honestly.
He knows how to speak. He's just full of shit, but that's Tim.
So today is going to be actually kind of interesting. We have a couple of things that both of us want to talk about, but I really want to start with what you wanted to talk about, because I think this is going to be fascinating, like absolutely fascinating, to hear your thoughts on what is considered to be a classic video game. Now, to give people some context of what the hell we're talking about here, I want you to talk about a little bit about your background to do with Super Mario 64, like basically what you thought back in the day, and now that we have the collection that just got released like last week or the week before or whenever it was, you know, talk a little bit, give the audience some context. Don't just talk about what you think of it today, because I want people to get a better understanding. And then before you jump into today, I'm going to give you like my thoughts on back in the day. Is that cool?
Yep.
All right, go for it.
So I've talked about this before in the past, but the first time I played Super Mario 64 and the first time I even knew or heard about the game, because back then I didn't have internet, or was in when I went to the arcades at the town that was like an hour away from my town. There was a mall there, there was an arcade there, and I played it through a virtual console kind of thing. Like I played it through goggles, and it was the Japanese version. And that's the first time I played that game, and I played the first level where you have to climb the mountain and you go and beat that giant bomb. And that's what I did. And I thought this was awesome. I was like, wow, man, it's 3D. It looks cool. It's in Japanese. I don't know why, but that made sense somehow for me. And then we went to a Walmart, and I saw a game called Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars for the Super NES. And I asked my mom if she could buy me that game for Christmas, because I thought that was the game I just played at the arcades, because that's how we were back then. We didn't know any better. Still, arguably, I don't know any better today, but my mom never did. And then years later, whenever the game came out, I would saw the commercials and whatnot, and I would realize this was actually a brand new game for a brand new console. And back then, looking at it, like, I should have known that there was no way that game could have run on the Super Nintendo, but like, why would I know that? So I would see that game, and then I didn't get a 64 until Star Wars Episode 1 Racer came out, which, if you can Google that, you should be able to find the exact date of when I got the 64. But that was well after Ocarina of Time. So, are you Googling it, by the way? Episode 1 Racer on N64.
You want to know what, the year that it was released?
Yeah, just the date. You should find it rather easily, because I got my 64 like maybe a month after that.
Yeah, 1999.
Okay,
April 1999.
Yeah, so the 64 came out in what, 96?
Yeah, exactly.
So I got the 64 3 years after it came out with that game as a bundle. My mom bought it for me. But before that, I had, every time I would have rented the 64 probably 3 or 4 times. And back then it was pretty cool. You could go to a corner store and rent a 64 or a PlayStation for like $20. And it would come in like this cool little like black suitcase, and it would have one controller, and then you could rent an extra game or two for like $4 a game. So I would always do that. I would always rent the 64, and I would always rent Super Mario 64 and GoldenEye and bring that home for the weekend. And for some reason, I could never play Mario 64 for more than an hour, because I just bought the 3D All-Stars thing, and I was like, I've never, like, I was like at 4 or 5 stars, and I was playing stuff I didn't remember. So like for me, Mario 64, I could only play for like an hour, never got too far along, and I'd never really understood why until now. And that's where I'll let you talk for a bit.
All right, so for me, Obviously, it's a little bit different, right? Like, Nintendo 64 was one of those consoles that I had day and date with release. And I had seen, like, in the magazines and stuff like that, like, a lot of the showcase from, like, Space World, and it was, like, super exciting. It was one of these things where I was like, oh my god, this is going to be, like, the greatest game ever, and I was super stoked for the game, you know what I mean? Like, I was so, so excited for it, and the thing was that when it finally came out and finally had access to it, it blew my mind. Like, and this was something that, I mean, we're obviously going to have a back and forth with this, but at the time, this is the thing, like, at the time, there was really nothing like that. And I know we're going to get people that will comment and say, what are you talking about, man? There was a Triforce 74B that had a perfect control scheme and stuff. But seriously, like, at the time, there really weren't 3D games that allowed you to run around in a fully 3D space, manipulating the camera and stuff like that. They just weren't there. Like, what had been done, because you have to remember that the Saturn and the PlayStation were already out long before the N64 came out, but that was playing tricks, you know what I mean? Like, there were fixed camera angles, there was a lot of stuff that wasn't fully 3D, like that that, like, incorporated, like, 2D 3D elements, things of that nature. When Mario 64 came out, it was really the game that set the stage for all other 3D platformers that came out at the time, of which there was a gajillion, right? Like, there was so many. But that said, when I first played the game, and even to this day, like, cause I just, you know, I have it as well. And I went and I was, I got, like, I think what is it? 8 stars, 7 stars in the, per world. What is it? Do you
probably
remember?
Probably 8.
Okay.
Oh,
so
per
I
world
did
it's 6. Yeah. Or yeah.
It's 6.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So, like, I just got those 6 for the very first stage, and that was literally it. Like, that's all I got. And I was like, man, it takes some real getting used to. And I'm gonna stop there. It takes some real getting used to. Now go ahead. Tell the world why you love it so much.
Yeah, so I know this is gonna be controversial, and that's fine. Many people will not agree with me. But I don't know why I'm like, I don't want to say it because it feels so blasphemous, but I think Mario 64 is complete trash. And that's like, and obviously, like, as I said it, I think it's a bit exaggerated. I can see some of the merits, but I, like, for me, a platformer needs near perfect controls for me to enjoy it. And Super Mario World, which was the precursor to this, had perfect controls, and that's why it's one of the greatest games ever, probably my favorite game of all time, besides Link to the Past, because it was perfect. Everything about it was perfect. The controls were perfect. You never fought the controls. And in Mario 64, and I know there's some people out there, I've seen crazy playthroughs that are just ridiculous at this game. So I guess the classic get good argument might apply here, but it's like, I just don't get it. Like, I'm so frustrating with this game because I'm always fighting the camera. And there are some levels, like the first level is not that bad. The bomb level, the bomb painting, I think it is not that bad because there's not that many like leap of fates that you have to take. You can get it pretty easily. And there are still some frustrating moments that are caused by the camera because the camera is not... There's some limitations to that camera. It's not like today where you can fully rotate it as much as you want. There is limitations somehow that happens fairly recently. Like, you always, you don't have full access. And sometimes in later levels, there are jumps that you just can't seem to get the camera to work perfectly. And it's hard to gauge the distance you need to jump or how much of a running jump you need or whatever. I don't know how to explain it, but it's hard to gauge. And the frustrating thing about Mario 64 and, like, my many Mario games is that if you play a level and you're like, let's say it takes you 4 minutes to reach a certain part and you have this jump to make and you miss it, you die and you have to start all over again. And this is a very bad design choice in my mind. And this is something that still is in the new Super Mario Brothers series today. Like when you, which one of the reasons why I explained before that my son has less trouble playing Super Meat Boy than he does with new Super Mario Brothers 2 on his 3DS or his 2DS rather. Because when he plays a level in New Super Mario Bros. 2 in a castle, let's say, and he dies, he gets booted out of the castle, and it takes like another 15 seconds to get back in, press A and whatnot. While in Super Meat Boy, if you die, you restart, boom, right away. So there's stuff like that, especially when some of the later 3D levels in Mario 64 are much longer and much harder. And then you're finding the controls, and then you make a jump that you would probably make if you took it 10 times, like let's say 6 or 7 times. But it's not really a difficult jump, it's just that the camera angle really makes it difficult to see what direction you're actually leaping to. And then you die and you have to restart the whole level. It just gets to a point where I don't understand. I can get why people love this, and but I don't. Like, to me, doesn't make any sense how this is one of the highest rated games of all time, if you go to Metacritic, considering that it, compared to its predecessor, which is Super Mario World, like, it doesn't play. It arguably took a major step back as far as controls and playability. And I understand that it's, for its time, was probably the best option you had for 2D platformers, and by far. That still doesn't make it as a good excuse for me. It still shouldn't have gotten that pass it did back then. And it's arguably like it got a pass from everyone because this was praised by everyone. This was not like something that had mixed reviews, unless I'm remembering wrong. I think pretty much everybody gave it like far praised reviews, and I just don't understand it, and I think I will never understand this, and that's why I'm quite curious. Because if you look at Mario Sunshine played a bit better, still had some issues, but by the time Galaxy and even Odyssey came around, like I'm still not the biggest fan of 3D platformers, but in Odyssey, like, I didn't really have any problems with the camera whatsoever that I remember of. So obviously I'm jumping ahead there, but still, for me, like, Mario 64 took a major step back in front when it comes to playability and controls compared to its predecessor, Mario World. So that's why I'm a bit confused by its legendary status.
I think, personally, what it is that... And I don't know if anyone would actually argue with you over, like comparing just gameplay to gameplay, right? Like in terms of precision jumping and stuff like that, I don't think anyone... I would be surprised if people like straight up argued with you. I think what it is in all the things that you said, it took a major step back. I think that's absolutely accurate. I think it's just that because it took such a major step forward in terms of three-dimensional game design, I think that's why it got the pass. Is that, like, no one was used to taking a character in a three-dimensional space and having it jump on a three-dimensional platform. And I think it's that simple. Truly, I think it's that simple. I think it's just that simple. That Nintendo, when they were designing this, they basically gave so much leeway that... I mean, like you said to me in a text, you were like, you can do like a blind jump like halfway across the entire stage, you know what I mean? Like, and then just like pull back on the analog stick and, oh, there you go, you know, I made my jump type of thing. And part of me, listen, I'm not a game designer or anything like that, but part of me thinks like, I wonder if some of that was done intentionally because of what I just said, that like no one had experience in moving a character around. And I remember even me, like, you have no idea how hard it was for me to get to the top of that damn, like, where the bomb is there, the King bomb or whatever. It took me ages to get up there because I had never moved a character around like that. Like, it just... it felt so weird, and I remember that. I vividly remember that of, like... like how it just, it felt so strange, and like just jumping on like a Goomba took me forever to get the timing right. And so I just wonder if it's that. Maybe it's not like a giant conspiracy here or anything. What if it's just something that simple?
Yeah, I don't. What do you mean though by that simple?
Like that they intentionally designed the game with like all that sort of leeway and all that sort of I find when I look at it, I'm like, I don't understand how they didn't realize that you needed a second stick to control the camera, because they were so close. They created a camera system. They knew that you had to move a character around in three-dimensional space. They knew that if you take Mario and you run into the screen as an example, they know that you're not gonna see a platform potentially behind you. So, well, now because you're running towards the screen, it's behind the player. So they knew that you had to move a camera around, and they did a good job with the C buttons of like, you know, you could position the camera left, right, center, close, up, whatever. But I just can't believe that no one in the development team came up and said, hey, you know, like, wouldn't this control better if we could move the camera seamlessly instead of it being positional as what they did? And I just wonder if the same sort of design choices were done with the way some of the platforming is done, because like some of the game is ultra forgiving and then other is the exact opposite, where it's like brutally hard to figure out where you're going. So I'm just wondering if like some of that stuff was just done intentionally. That's all I mean. Okay. Is like, that's it.
Yeah, I really don't know. I'm just wondering, like I said, like, I'm having fun with the game. This is the most I've ever played Mario 64. The farther I've gotten into, I'm now at 35 stars, and I'm halfway there, because I think you need 70 to go to the
final boss
Bowser fight. So I just want to get there. Let's see if I can continue pushing through this. Maybe I can find some of the easier stars, Google that, something like that. We'll see. I just, like I said, like, to me, this is the most overrated game ever made. Like, I don't get it. Like, for me, I would have understood like a 7.5 or 8 out of 10 if you want back then. Maybe even an 8.5 if you want to go that, because of like you said, this was one of the first like real accessible 3D games out there. And just for the wow factor, I could maybe understand. I just don't understand how it got the phenomenon that it is, because to me, this is a major step back to Mario World. I think this is probably the best. We've talked about the Nintendo bump before and how I think the Nintendo bump might exist, but it goes both ways. Some games, I think, like Luigi's Mansion and the GameCube, for example, I think, got it the other way around, where I thought that game now is recognized as a better game than it was back then. But since it was a Nintendo game, people were expecting more, or were expecting a Mario launch game or whatever it was. I think this is the best example of the Nintendo bump you could make me. I really think that this game got a Nintendo bump, and I'm looking forward to people disagreeing with me in the comments, as Jared apparently opens up a motorcycle in his apartment. But we're,
yeah, sorry.
Like, I really hope people, if you disagree with me, let me know in the comments. I'm looking forward to a healthy debate here. I might be wrong.
Yeah,
I've been wrong before. There are games out there that I'm apparently the only one that doesn't like. So this could be one of those. But like I said, I'm gonna keep playing this. I'm having fun. Don't get me wrong. It's fun to go back and actually finally give this game a chance and play it for what it is. But it's still. Now I finally understand why I could not play it for more than an hour back in the day. Like I've said many times before, the PlayStation 1 and Nintendo 64 generation is my least favorite by far, because it's the birth of 3D gaming and they were still figuring out the cameras and controls back then. But I still, it doesn't excuse the fact that this game got so much praise back then for me.
Well, I'm really curious, and anyone that wants to debate, try to do your best to give some context to what you're saying. Like, don't just be like, oh, you're an idiot, it's amazing, best game ever. Like try to ground your comments a little bit, because it's very difficult to talk about some of these things if you're blinded by nostalgia. And like, I'm not oblivious to this. Like, when I first played Ocarina of Time, and to this day I still say Ocarina of Time was a phenomenal game on the Nintendo 64. But I played Mario 64 again after Ocarina of Time, and I died 500 million times because Ocarina of Time was just so much more refined.
This is perfect. You lead me to a perfect segue, because that's a game I mentioned to you when I texted you my frustration with Mario 64. Was like, Ocarina of Time did it perfectly for me. Like, the fact that you can press R and recenter the camera at any time. Like, of course, there's not that much platforming in Ocarina of Time. You can't even jump, but there is some. And I never had an issue with it back then. And I've replayed Ocarina of Time on the 3DS, yep, like when it came out, and had a blast with it. So I think that game did it perfectly. And of course, they've improved the camera even more now with 3D Zelda games. But still, for a start, Ocarina of Time, I have no issues with it whatsoever. In Mario 64, on the other hand, I can't say the same at all. So, and still, Ocarina of Time came out 2 years later. But like I said to you, like, the fact that it's the first should not excuse it.
No, I agreed. No, and I really agree with you. I do agree with you. Like, even now, going back, like, playing, I'm like, I get the majesty. I do. I totally get the majesty of it. You know, like, and I could see reviewers being just totally blown away by, like, in 1996, you know, 95, 96, like, first time you get your hands on it, and you're just like, wow, like, I can't believe I'm doing this, you know, like, I have a whole world I can explore, and like, oh my god, best day ever. But I do agree that of all the 3D Marios, that is the one that really takes the longest to get used to the way it plays, because I find it a little too loose at times and stuff. But I was really surprised by the sheer amount of praise that the game was getting now by, like, YouTubers saying, like, oh, going back, and they're like, oh, Sunshine's the one that, you know, it takes the most to get used to. I'm like, what? I'm like, that I totally disagree with. Like, for me, Mario 64, you can tell that this is one of the very first, you know, like, 3D open, I don't say open world, but you know what I mean, like, where you could just explore, like, games, and it got more refined as the series went on. I don't find that Sunshine is less than Mario 64. So I'm going to be very curious to hear what people have to say about that. So you have any other comments on that?
No, did you try Sunshine briefly, or?
I have not. Okay. I have not. I did. But I'm just going.
I need to take a look at the controls, because I could swear there was a way to just stand still and aim the flood at stuff. And I'm sure that there is. I just haven't.
Yeah, there is.
It out
sure,
yet.
There is.
So
you have
I'll
to hold another
controls,
button.
But I barely touched it. Like, I got like two or three power stars in that, and basically my younger son has been having the fun with that, because they like the water gun. So I think
that one will
be a bigger success. Mario 64, I don't think they'll play it for long. And Mario Odyssey, they might. But man, there's so much more useless motion control in that game that, again, only Nintendo could get away with. But that's maybe we'll talk about those games in another future Fanboys.
Sure. And now, I wanted to also just to sort of wrap up, sort of switch stuff. Well, sort of. You left a comment, like, we were having a little bit of a back and forth talking about hardware and this and that, and right now nobody knows, right? Like, absolutely nobody knows what Nintendo is planning on doing. Like you mentioned, I 100% agree with you. Like, the Switch is doing gangbusters, right? Like, it's doing absolutely phenomenal. I think it's like over 60 something million units have been sold, maybe even higher now since the last time I checked. And like, really, there's no need for Nintendo to do a single thing, in my opinion, anyway. There's no need for them to do anything hardware related. Like, if they just pump out They have their Hyrule Warriors, you know, game coming out. They have another Breath of the Wild, like another Zelda coming out. You know, if they just keep releasing games that people want to play, I don't see any need for new hardware personally. But what do you have to say about all of this?
Because my comment was more of a response to your podcast with Tim, because that's not exactly what you were saying then. You were kind of worried or questioning what will Nintendo do when the PS5 and Xbox Series X come out because of the large gap in power between the Switch and
and that was for next year. So basically, I was saying, like, what I was trying, like, the thought process was basically to say, you know, a year and a half into the life of those platforms, will Nintendo need to do anything to answer or not?
Because that's my response was basically the Switch is already massively underpowered compared to the PS4 and Xbox One, and you haven't really seen an issue there because third-party games are rather unexisting in the sense that we're not getting like the AAA games that PS4 and Xbox One are getting in, like with very, very few rare exceptions, like besides Doom and Doom Eternal. Well, Doom was a 360 game, so Doom Eternal we're going to get eventually. There's not that many other games that I can think of on the top of my head, and it hasn't really affected Nintendo, because we did a podcast when the Switch was still called the NX, Fanboys, and we called it Why the NX Will Fail, and this is one of our most successful Fanboys ever, and we were both massively wrong, by the way. Obviously, we both NX would fail, and one of the reasons for that, we thought that Nintendo could succeed without third-party support, or at least without the same third-party support the other consoles would get. And it turns out we were wrong about that, because Nintendo was smart here, and like they did with the Wii, kind of, is they're differentiating themselves with the others. Basically, they're not really competing with them. They're hoping that people will find the Switch unique, and that they will give people a reason to buy it. And that's, I think, a key strategy there, which is why I think from future generations, like we saw with the Xbox One and the PS4, and like I said, like the PS4 kicked the crap out of the Xbox One. And I think I said that in one of their last podcasts we did, and we had this one dude who left like three comments basically bashing me, saying that the Xbox One isn't a failure with 40 million consoles sold. And I just want to say that I didn't say the Xbox One was a failure. I said the PS4 kicked its ass. And that's true, because even though the Xbox One might have sold 40 million, and like I said, might, because we don't have official sales number for the Xbox One. So it could be 40, it could be 20, it could be 30. We don't know. We're assuming it's 40, and it's most likely is. The PS5 is what, like, a PS4 like has sold, like, what, 110, 120 million? It's on its base. It's going to be massive. Like, it's basically triple the sales of the Xbox One, and the Xbox 360 sold like what, 86 million million consoles. So like,
holy crap, dude! I have not. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. You're on a roll. As of May, PlayStation 4 has sold, not shipped, 110.4 million.
Yeah, so it's gonna reach 120 million easily.
Wow.
So that's,
I did not know that,
triple the amount of what we think the Xbox sold. So like, I think because both systems are so similar now, I think what we're going to see is, depending on if console generations last forever, I think every generation there's going to be a huge winner and a huge loser, because there's not really any reason anymore to buy both consoles, because they're basically the same besides a few exclusives. Yeah. And it didn't used to be that way back in like the PS2 days and even the PS1 days. Usually back then, consoles had a lot of exclusives, and Sony still has a lot of massive exclusives, but Google it, it's not even close to what it used to be. So if you can live without a few exclusives, like, you're basically going to pick the system that offers the most bang for your buck. And then there's the Switch, which is a completely different system. That many people choose that, And many people also choose the other one and choose a Switch as a complementary system. So the Switch exists for a reason, and that's why I thought your point was not was what was wrong. But that's not the only point I want to make. The thing that I thought would have happened by now is that I thought we would have gotten more like updates to the Switch, like the 3DS did and the DS before that, and even the Game Boy. Like we got a Game Boy, a Game Boy Pocket, a Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance got DSP, and the DS got the DS XL, the DSi, DSi XL. Mm-hmm. The 3DS got one every year basically, because it started with the 3DS XL, then we got the 2DS, then we got the new 3DS XL, and the new 3DS, and the new 2DS XL. So I thought we would have gotten more from that with the Switch, and so far it hasn't happened, and the Switch is almost 4 years old now. It's going to be four in February, I believe. So I don't know what's going to, but I assume we're going to get that soon. I think they're going to get like kind of like what they did with the new 3DS and what PlayStation 4 did with the Pro and Xbox One did with the Xbox One X. I think we might get some kind of upgrade that will just entice already Switch owners to upgrade to get a second one or a third Switch if you already have a Switch Lite. But I don't think we're going to get a new, the Switch 2, if you will, until like 2023, 2024, or even 2025 at the latest. The only exception to this is if next year the Switch sales really start to slow down. And it hasn't been the case, and we have no reason to believe that that will be the case, because next year we'll have a new Pokemon. We might have Breath of the Wild 2. So next year should be a great year, because this year was kind of slow in terms of new software sales. And yet they still got record sales every month. So as long as Nintendo can keep pushing these sales, they have zero pressure. And you have to imagine that every Switch sale that they get right now probably racks them a huge profit, because these things must be selling at a huge profit compared to what they were selling for in 2017. So it's still like you have to think that PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5 will be selling at maybe not a loss, but near loss. And same with Xbox. They're not going to be making much profit, and they're hoping this has been what they were doing since the beginning of time. They're hoping to make up the margins with software and controllers and whatnot. But the Switch right now is obviously selling like hotcakes. They're selling a lot of software, and the hardware probably is profitable, because Nintendo has always had that strategy of not selling consoles at a loss. So I just don't see Nintendo being in any kind of a hurry, unless the PS5 and Xbox Series, whatever it's called, X or S, sell really well and forces them to make a change. Obviously, I think they obviously have something in the works. Like obviously everybody does, but I don't think they're in any kind of pressure right now to do anything.
Yeah, so you basically summed up exactly what like I'm thinking. So like that was what I, and if I failed to get that across, that's you know, sorry. But like my thought is always like when new hardware comes out, you typically, you know, you gauge the market, right? See what happens, because that's what I just don't see Nintendo right now being in any hurry to change what is already working, because like there's so many different rumors of so many different things. And like if they suddenly said like, oh, we're gonna make like, you know, a pro version of the Switch, but it's gonna have exclusive games and stuff like that, I can't see them doing that. I just cannot see them doing that. That would be very perplexing to me right now, given how smooth everything is, and why would you want to split your user base and stuff. But I 100% agree that like if, say, next holiday season, you know, things like are slowing down and stuff like that, then we might see. I don't know. It's like the Switch has been doing everything right in the sense of like what, well, it's everything right. It's been doing what Nintendo's been doing what they want to do, and they've been very successful at doing what they want to do. I still cannot believe that the Switch, you know, like, it's still so primitive in so many different ways, but it does it's still such a fun system, and like being able to take, like, I love this, being able to just sit on my sofa, you know, and just like, you know, like play on the gamepad for a bit before I watch TV or I do something else. Like, it's pretty cool. Like, and that concept, I'm really curious to see where Nintendo goes. And I think that's part of it too. Like, I'm a little excited to see where does Nintendo go from here? Like, what do you think happens? Like, do they release a Switch 2? Like, do you think this is going to be Nintendo's thing for the next, like, decade to do what the Switch is doing?
Yeah, I don't think they're ever going to release a console anymore. I don't think they're ever going to go back to a console, like, exclusively a console. I don't think that makes much sense, because they were getting their ass kicked. Even with the 64 and the GameCube, people don't realize it, but every system was decreasing in sales by half. Like the with the 64 sold like half of what the SNES did.
I have it right here if you'd like to know. Like, I have it right in front of me.
And then the Wii is the odd one out, because the Wii was I still think was a fluke, because then they went to the Wii U, and the Wii U like did half what the GameCube did, so they went back to what they were the pattern they were doing before. So they were getting their ass kicked in the console market. The only saving grace they had was in the portable market with the Game Boy Advance and the DS. The DS is, like, I think their best-selling console ever. And then the 3DS, obviously, by the time the 3DS happened, they had much more competition with smartphones. So the 3DS saw a massive decline compared to the DS, but still sold 80 million units, which is quite impressive for the competition that they have. If you look at what the Vita sold compared to the PSP, like, it's like,
yeah, it was night and day different.
Like the competition with smartphones is really hurt the 3DS, and they still managed to sell a lot of 3DSs out there. So I don't see them ever going back to the console market, and this hybrid stuff I think is very profitable for them. And I wouldn't even be surprised if Sony released a hybrid at some point of their PS5, maybe in a few years when it makes sense to do so, or when the technology is affordable, because it seems that it's something people are clamoring for. So I don't think they're gonna go back to consoles. So I wouldn't be surprised if they don't. Like, they didn't, they called the Wii U because they didn't want to stop the Wii brand, because the Wii was so successful. So I would imagine that the next console they do will probably keep the Switch name, because of the recognition the Switch has right now. It's a good IP to own. So, and again, Jared and his motorcycles in the house. It's not a good place to own a motorcycle, Jared.
Come on, keep man. It in the garage. That's where it's at.
So yeah, that's,
keep it in your pants.
Yeah, that's why I think that the next console will probably be the Switch 2 or the Switch U, maybe. For some reason, they want to go back to that route.
Oh God, please don't do that.
I'm quite curious if they will release like an upgrade, because the new 3DS was a failure. Let's face it, like the 3D, it did not really sell that many more 3DSs, and it only had four exclusive games. So I think what they're going to do is probably release a new Switch upgrade, probably even another better battery, maybe make it a bigger screen for the portable system, maybe have, I don't know, a better GPU or whatever. But I don't think it will have exclusive games. I don't think they'll go that route, because it's confusing for the general consumer, and it's confusing for parents. Which, by the way, many kids will be disappointing when they open their new Xbox One X this December and expect the Series X, because it looks like many parents got confused, and I don't blame them, because even I would probably get confused. But yeah, I think we'll, the next upgrade will just be a Switch with some better stats, but it won't have exclusive games until the Switch 2 or whatever they decide to call it, like in 20
years. Yeah, and that's pretty much where I am at. That's pretty much exactly where I'm at. Like, I look at it and I'm like, I think that's exactly what's going to happen, because, like, just look at Breath of the Wild, right? Like, Breath of the Wild to this day still has frame rate issues, because for whatever reason, optimization, power of the system, whatever. And that to me was rare. You know, like, to see a franchise like Zelda actually have, like, frame rate issues, I did not expect that. I still, you know, like when you go in the Lost Woods there and you've got all like the leaves blowing around and like the sprite little animations and stuff, like it takes a beating.
I played the
man.
Wii U version, so I didn't really have those problems. But
okay, well, that's interesting. If they're not on,
yeah, the Wii U version
Wii U,
is the better version. It's some
well, that,
people
that's
don't,
not surprising.
Don't realize, but
yeah,
it
I know
is.
That's not surprising. That's not surprising at all. But my point just being that like, if they released like a pro version, or I'm just calling it that for because I have no other name to call it, if they were to do that and it, you know, it helped with games like that, I think that would go a long way, you know, and all the stuff that you said, you like a larger screen potentially for the portable, you know, more powerful GPU, blah, blah, blah. I think it could definitely, that
could
work.
I think
the biggest
rumor was it being 4K ready. That could be something.
Yeah, and so for this is where I have issues, because 4K is still like, I don't want to say niche. It's just that, like, yes, you know, with HDR and stuff like that, it does certainly makes a difference, but it's not night and day for like absolutely everything. I know people are going to come in, what are you saying? And all of this, but like for me, I haven't been incentivized to purchase a 4K capture card for YouTube as an example, because 99% of the videos on YouTube aren't 4K compliant or like ready or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know how much of a selling feature that truly is for the Switch as an example. Maybe for sure for like, you know, like your Xbox, your PlayStation, sure, but for a Switch, I don't know. I just don't know if that's truly that big of a deal. Maybe I'm totally wrong, because obviously when you and I ever get together and we do podcasts, we're always wrong. As history will show, if you look at our podcasts, our track record is like the worst. So just think the opposite of whatever we say and you're in business.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just go back to the hardware stuff, because I actually had the page open funny enough while you were talking. I think for whatever reason, people, like, I don't know. It's like I find that people wear rose-tinted glasses when they think of Nintendo. And they have so many powerful emotions or nostalgia with the system that they think it did way better than it did. And I'm talking all the way back to the NES. Like, people are like, oh, the NES crushed it, man. It dominated. Yes, it did. But it also only sold 62 million units. And I say only because, like, if you compare that to what some of the consoles are doing today, it's crazy. But I understand the market was a lot smaller back then.
Yeah,
but it's still.
I think that's the key there. I know what you're saying, and you're right. Like, the PSP outsold the NES, but it's just, back then, like, the market was dead. Like Nintendo had to market this as a toy, basically, in the beginning, because people were afraid of video games because the Atari completely crashed the market.
That's right.
Here.
But keep in mind one something very important here. Only here. Like, in Japan, they didn't have to worry about that, and people always forget this. But the Famicom came out in 1983. In Japan. It only came out here in 1985, 1986, depending on where you were. That's my God, that's almost a generation later. Like, you know, it's, but anyways, the point just being that 62 million, but here's the key thing. It sold 500 million pieces of software. That is their largest, like, from what's on my screen right now, that's one of the largest, not the largest, but it's one of the largest install base that they have. That's an unbelievable amount of software for the amount of units sold. And when we go to the SNES, it wasn't quite half. It's 49 million. And these numbers are taken directly from Nintendo's financials. Like, it's their official thing. So Super Nintendo sold 49 million, and I'm rounding up to like the nearest digit, and it sold 379 million pieces of software. Now check this. Let's just forget about the software for now. Let's just do hardware, just to make it simple. So 62 down to 49, not quite half there, but that's a jump down, right? now from 49 for the Super NES, as you call it, to the N64 was 33. So we're dropping, every generation so far, we're dropping a good 10 plus million units. And then from the N64's 33 million to GameCube's 22 million. So we went from 62 million at the NES down to 22 million on the GameCube. Like, that's very significant. And then with the Wii, and I'm leaving out portables because the portables were always super crazy. I mean, I'll give you the numbers if you want, but the Wii was 102 million. And if we go to the Wii U, it was 14 million. Again, rounding up to the nearest digit. So if I remove the Wii, what does that show you?
Yeah, because it goes from 60 to 49 to 33 to 20 to 14. So you see the decline there. Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, there's somebody here. Wait.
The professionalism continues.
I'll be right back.
So I will talk to myself. So I love. There's nothing like doing a podcast with Steven. We make fun of Tim, but Tim would never do this. So, yeah, so basically what that's showing you, what that trend is showing you is a sheer decline in the user base for their hardware, basically. And I think this, I mean, a lot of people could argue that Wii U, what killed Wii U was its branding more than anything else. The fact that so many people thought it was an extension to the Wii and were like, well, why the hell am I going to buy like a new add-on for the Wii? That doesn't make any sense. I think they really didn't do themselves any favors whatsoever by doing that. And that's why, like, when Steven was saying about, like, a Switch something, I don't know if that's actually a great idea. Because they just have to make sure that they differentiate it completely. Because it's the same thing that just happened with Microsoft. So that little joke that he was saying, if you don't know, Microsoft really, really needs to change their naming convention drastically.
Sorry to interrupt that. I'll be back in like 2-3 minutes. So keep.
That's fine. Talking. Yeah, it's all good. I'll talk to myself. So basically Microsoft, right, they had their original Xbox, so the OG Xbox, then they had the Xbox 360, then they had the Xbox One, and that's where we're currently at. And then the problem was that they started to do iterations of the Xbox One. So you ended up with Xbox One X, like their pro version, and then Xbox One S, which was still a pretty wicked system, just a smaller compact version of it. But why would you name your next gen system the exact same as your previous one, except swap out one and replace it with Series? And I honestly don't think this was a wise move. I truly, truly do not think this was a smart play, because I mean, look at the Amazon orders. On the date of the Xbox Series X and Series S pre-orders, sales of the Xbox One X skyrocketed by, like, I think it was like, was it 727%? Something crazy like that. Like, it just went like through the roof, the sales of the Xbox One X. And that doesn't make any sense. That's obviously not what these people were going for. That doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that now when those are at end of life? It doesn't make any sense. So I think Nintendo just needs to be a little bit careful in how they go about doing this, because if they do call it like Switch 2 could work, something like that, like a numerical like addition to the title, that could work, but I don't see Nintendo doing that. They've never done that in their past, so I don't see them doing that. Although they did with the 3DS as opposed to just the DS, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to wait and see about that to see what they're actually going to do. But I would be very surprised if they don't like completely change the like everything about their next gen system. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a Switch in concept where you're going to go back and forth, because like Steven said, I don't see them ever making another dedicated console ever again. I think it's gonna hands down be something like this where you can go portable and not portable. And I wanted to have a little bit of a conversation about that to say, what are those development studios doing right now? Because it's so strange. I find it unbelievably strange what is happening right now with Nintendo and how their development studios don't seem to be working on anything. And it's very perplexing to me, because if you go back and you look at all the games that they developed for the Nintendo 3DS and the Wii U, as an example, when they coexisted together, and you look and you're like, man, there were like so many different games that they were releasing, that were putting out. And I understand that the Switch is a huge success, so they don't need to put as much effort out there, but it still seems so bizarre to me that there's not like just tons of games, either like, you know, tons of digital eShop games, or, you know, the AAA releases or what have you. I just find it very, very perplexing to me. Just to me, I find it very, very odd. Maybe I'm completely bonkers, but I find it odd that they're seems like they just vanished for some reason. So anyways, the last thing that that I just wanted to sort of mention here and get people's thoughts of is the Xbox Game Pass. Now, I know, what does this have anything to do with Nintendo? Well, I'm wondering where the industry is going. And it seems like we have, like, at least it seems, it appears to me like we have three distinct sort of lines that are being drawn in the sand for where the industry is going based on the three console manufacturers that exist today. And from Nintendo's standpoint, it very much feels anyways like they're working on their own games that are fun for their fan base, that can be played on the television or that can be played on the go. And everything that they do right now seems to be with that sort of in mind, where this is where we're going. So we're going in the direction of basically gaming everywhere is their type of thing, but with their own hardware and their own unique experiences. And with Sony, it seems anyway like they're going to follow the traditional console path. So for them, you know, we want these really big, like, tentpole releases that are going to be played on a powerful machine on your 4K, you know, gorgeous screen, and it's going to be everything you could possibly dream of. But that they seem to be really investing into those massive tentpole releases. So like in the last little bit, your Ghost of Tsushima, your Last of Us Part 2, and so on and so forth. Like, that seems to be anyway where they're going, even with PlayStation 5, is that they're going to be focusing on these big releases that will convince you to purchase their platform to get those big releases on. And like Steven was saying earlier, that seems to be their key differentiator, is their exclusive titles from their first parties. And those experiences you can't get anywhere else. That's their whole thing. Whereas with Microsoft really, I gotta say, they really impressed me. And I know we have a lot of retro fans on the channel. I mean, that's what the channel was made of, is Dragon Quest and Sega Saturn, essentially. And so I know a lot of you are huge physical media fans. You guys really like to own your games, to display your games. And listen, kudos, that's awesome. Go for it. But Microsoft's strategy very much seems in line with, okay, so what we want to do is we want you to give us a monthly subscription, and you'd be able to sort of like Nintendo's Play Everywhere strategy, where their market is sort of like, okay, so our line in the sand is to say, pay us a monthly fee, and with that monthly fee, you'll have access to a wide assortment of games. And if they continue to purchase different companies, then it's sort of like, okay, well, we're, you know, you can only get those experiences on our application. And I'm really thinking that that is where Microsoft is going. So Steven, you sound like you're back. So I don't know what you heard or haven't heard.
I haven't heard. I've just been back like for like 30 seconds. So
okay, perfect. So basically what I just did was I explained, and I'm not going to repeat the whole thing, but I basically explained that in my opinion, coming into this new generation, we seem like every console manufacturer of the big three seems to have drawn their lines in the sand in a very unique approach. So with Nintendo, it's like the game everywhere, right? So that you can play our experiences our way, but you can play them on the TV, you can play them on the go, you can play them on the plane, just have at it, but you're going to be playing with our experiences. Sony seems to be heavily investing in their first party exclusives, but to stay within the traditional console gaming market. Like, we want you to buy our box. We want you to come on our platform because we have Ghost of Tsushima, we have Last of Us Part 2, we have Spider-Man, we have, you know, whatever, God of War, etc., etc. They seem to be, like, going in that direction. And I was just saying that Microsoft seems to be going much more in the application of an app that, like, I can see them basically in the not too distant future. I can actually see them releasing an Xbox application on every device where it's like a Netflix, and you pay a monthly subscription. And the way that they're enticing people to pay for like Game Pass is by acquiring a lot of these companies. Like this news with Bethesda, mm-hmm. I mean, this was game changing. This was
Did
absolutely
you say
game changing.
On the past podcast that they had 15 million subscribers to Game Pass? Because yes, doesn't that make them 150 million of revenue every month?
Yeah, that's right.
That's crazy. Imagine if they can get that number, if they can double that number in like a year or two.
Yes, like I know. That's my whole point.
That's why, yeah, so. I think that's why Game Pass makes sense, because I think a user said in the comments that they weren't profitable yet with Game Pass, and that might be correct, but like they're in here for the long game, and if they can get like 50 million subscribers, 100 million subscribers in like 10 years, imagine, that's like almost $1 billion in revenue every
month.
Can't
do the math.
Like
100 I love
million
it.
times 10, is that a billion?
A billion, yes.
That's yep. insane. So I think they're onto something here. If they can,
well, this is the point.
Like, because Game Pass to me right now is almost unreal. Like, for like, I think it's $12, you told me, Canadian a month. Like, the number of games you get, like, that's really appealing to me. I have two kids here. The oldest is really into video games. The youngest is starting to be more curious. But his brother at his age was already into video games, so I'm not sure if he's going to be, and that's fine. But, like, for me, getting an Xbox Series S or X with Game Pass, I could have the system and never actually buy a physical game ever, and just have access to hundreds of games every month. And basically, I just can imagine my kids never being bored and me finally being able to play some games like Gears of War and Halo 5 that I haven't played. I have never played those. I used to be such a massive Halo and Gears fans, and I haven't played them in years. So it's just something that I'm really considering, because obviously the PlayStation 5 has games that I'm more looking forward to, especially if they keep the Last of Us series going. If they will, I don't know. But besides that, and now that I think about it, it's basically the only game I would want to play that would make me want to play the PS5. So, yeah, I think the Xbox Series S or X is really something I'm going to be considering in the future, because there's so much that they offer for a family that it's ridiculous to me. Because you don't need, I don't need to buy games for it. And now with the internet that I have now, I can actually download stuff and not take it like a month for me to get the game. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if I get back to having an Xbox next gen, because as you know, I traded my Xbox One away to EB Games like 3 years ago, I believe. So yeah, this might be me coming back to them.
Yeah, man, and so what I was just saying before you got back was just to say, like, I personally find that the lines are being drawn in the sand, and we have three very different approaches to the future of gaming that are starting to materialize right now, and I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens in the next months and years as we move forward. But yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I actually subscribed to Xbox Game Pass without an Xbox One. Like, and I did it because you can look, right? Like, before you join, you can look and see, like, what games are available and stuff like that. And I already have an Xbox One controller because my Xbox 360 controller died for PC. And so I was looking and I was like, well, why not? You know what I mean? Like, when I started to look at the games, and I was like, you know, like, you got stuff like Resident Evil 7 is on there. And I was like, what? I'm like, how is Resident Evil 7 on there? Like, that's not made by Microsoft. Like, what the hell? And then you look and you're like, you've got Destiny 2.
Dragon Quest 11 is on there, you said?
Yes, exactly. Like, Dragon Quest 11 is coming. Well, it's not even out yet, but they have the pre-order page is up there. And your Night in the Woods is on there. They've got, like, a bunch of, I think they got all of the Halo games. Don't quote me, guys.
Think, like, you've convinced me. I think I'm going to get an Xbox. I'm not sure if I'm going to get it by year's end there, but the only question is,
well,
I get a Series S or a Series X? That's the only question I have right now, because I'm not sure what I should get. I'm not sure, but because for me, I don't know technology, as you guys put it in your last podcast. So if there's if all the games will forever work on the S, and there's not that much difference, like, if man, $200 cheaper sounds perfect for me, especially with the monthly price, but maybe it's an ill-advised decision. So that's probably my biggest debate right now, but I think eventually I will get the Xbox Series, because...
Well, for me, the thing that's, like, I'm the most interested in, like, when I started to go through here and look at different things, I mean, like, Rage 2 and stuff, I'm like, this is nuts. But what really did it was when I looked at games that you and I have enjoyed for years, like, years. We never played Gears 4 or 5.
Yeah.
But we could, you know, we could. And I was like, damn, man. And, like, the new Halo, like, we could go through, and there's nothing stopping you and I from just going and playing Halo 4 and 5
if you
wanted.
Though, the last Halo I played, I believe, was 4. And I thought that there's been kind of, like, a decline in the campaigns. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure the multiplayer is still great, but I'm not really into multiplayer anymore that much, but I used to be. But the campaign itself, because I was thinking... when Microsoft unveiled Ori and the Blind Forest on the Switch, I was like, man, it would be so kick-ass if Microsoft and Nintendo would partner up and Microsoft would port Halo Combat Evolve to the Switch. It would just, like, be so kick-ass. It would be huge news, and it would sell, because they actually considered bringing the Master Chief Collection to the PS4. And as you might have heard before, they were actually in the works. There was a Halo game being made for the Game Boy Advance back in the day. Or was it the DS?
It's crazy,
so,
dude.
Microsoft is obviously open to the idea. And Combat Evolve, it's such a great game. Maybe it should get a few, like, bells and whistles. But still, that would be kick-ass to have that on the Switch. I would really want them to do so. And I think it makes sense for both of them. It's like, hey, look at this kick-ass Halo game on your new Switch. If you want to play the rest of the series, come on and buy an Xbox. It would be perfect. And, like, I'm sure some people would buy a Switch for that game and would sell tons of software, with Nintendo, like, getting, like, 30% of the cut of that. would make sense for both parties, I believe. So I would love to have a Halo Combat Evolved, which is arguably the best campaign in Halo. Maybe Halo Reach could make the argument, but the first one was awesome, man. I would love to have that on the Switch.
Yeah, man, and I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, ever since I've been, you know, like, messing around with Game Pass, I've been playing Hellblade, and I'm loving it. I really loving it, and I'm looking, and I'm like, what is there to stop them from releasing that on the Switch, as an example, where it's just an application, the Xbox Game Pass on Switch? Because the truth is, the money is not in the machine. That's obsolete thinking, you know what I mean? Like, the money is not in the hardware, the money is in the software. And if they can get 100 million subscribers or 200 million subscribers, like you said, you're talking serious money here. Like, serious money. And the more I'm looking at PlayStation 5 and Xbox One, Xbox Series, and that's what I'm calling it because it's so stupid, the name. The more I'm looking at it, the more I'm just like, you know, Sony's value proposition is really in its exclusives and only its exclusives anymore. And how long will that last? You know what I mean? Because it's like, if I buy that box, I buy that PlayStation 5, yeah, I'm going to get access to Spider-Man, I'm going to get access to Last of Us, you know, your Uncharteds and stuff like that. And those are great games. Don't get me wrong, they're fantastic. But now I've got Steven's kids, as an example, thrown into the mix. So now I've got little Bobby and Timmy there that are looking for, you know, like, oh, I want to play the new, it's not a great example for kids, but I was going to say the new, like, Doom. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, normally Steven would have to pay, you know, like $69.99 for those games, or he could just pay, you know, $12 a month for the console only version of Game Pass. And he has it the same day as his friend, who has to wait, well, not the same day as his friend, but like his friend has to wait all the way to Christmas or whatever to get that game as a gift, whereas all of a sudden, like, Steven's kids no longer are going to ask for video games for gifts because they're available day and date for a monthly fee. Like, this really changes
things. Yeah, it's also with kids, like, it's really difficult to know what they're going to be into when it comes to video games, because I've bought games that I thought for sure Elliot was going to be like huge fan of, and he played them for like 30 seconds and was like back to Rocket League or back to Mario Maker for some reason. So imagine spending $80 on games and them not liking them when you can spend like $10 a month and they have a variety, a huge library.
That's it. Exactly.
They're going to find at least one game in there that they're gonna love. So yeah, it's a huge value, for especially for families, I think, that many people will consider, especially when you look at the price of the Series S. Like, that's not a huge risk, man. If you want to invest in a brand new console, get a $300. Yep. Like, that's pretty enticing.
I know, and one last thing I'll mention on this is just that, like, a lot of these games are also what is classified as Play Anywhere. So I've been learning a lot more. Like, I've been out of Xbox for, like, since both Steven and I basically walked away from the brand. So that was, like you said, 3-4 years ago, whatever it was now. So I'm totally out of it, right? Like, I have no idea how anything works, basically. So I'm learning, like, relearning anyways some of this stuff, and this Xbox, like, Play Anywhere thing is unbelievable to me. To me, it's just unbelievable. So I pay $16 a month in order to get access to Ultimate Game Pass. That includes Xbox Live, Games with Gold. It includes PC and Xbox and Android support for Game Pass. And here we go. So Steven picks up an Xbox, an Xbox Series S. Good value. It does what he wants to do. He doesn't have, a 17K screen and all this, like, doesn't need the bells and whistles of everything. And and decides, like, okay, I'm going to play, and I'm making all of this up, of course, I'm going to play Gears 6. So Gears 6 comes out day and date, boom, it's available on Game Pass, loads it up. Meanwhile, I'm on my PC playing it in Omega K resolution, you know, 1,200 million frames per second on my $50,000 PC, and we're playing together, communicating over Xbox Live. That's unbelievable to me. You know, like, that's unbelievable. And then I decide, you know what, my back's a little sore in the computer chair, just gonna, Steven, give me a sec, I'm just gonna walk over to the couch, boot up my console's up, and here we go, we're right back where we left off. The fact that this is actually possible blows my mind, and like that it's so seamless and so easy to do. I'm telling you, I have a feeling that this coming generation, I'm going to be right back to being an Xbox fan again. I can just see it because the value is there, and it's going to be cool, man.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's awesome. We're going to have to start an Xbox Fanboys podcast next.
Well, we'll always have Nintendo. All right, man. So that's pretty much everything I wanted to cover today. So you want to say any closing remarks or anything?
No, that's fine. I think we did a good job. We were again worried about the length of this, but we did fine. So I hope you guys enjoyed, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go hop on my Harley and take off. All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one.